When two podcasts collide, magic happens. Welcome to Dinner Party, the podcast where I bring together my two hit shows, Cookery by the Book and Decorating by the Book. Around here, we're all about cooking, sharing stories behind recipes, and creating a cozy home. I'm your host, Susie Chase, a West Village wife, mom, and home cook, inspired by Martha Stewart, trying to live in a Nora Ephron movie, surrounded by toile, plaid, cookbooks, decorating books, and magazines. Cooking in my galley kitchen and living my best life in my darling New York City apartment in the cutest neighborhood in the city, the West Village. So come hang out and let's get into the show.
Hi, I'm Christine Paulus, and I am here to talk about The Rose Book, which has just been published by Fighting Press.
So, Christine, tell me about your position as the collection development librarian at the Luester T. Mertz Library at the New York Botanical Garden. So, how do you go about selecting and preserving botanical literature for the collection?
I realize I always sound like I'm bragging when I describe what I do, but I might just have the best job in the world because I get paid to shop for books, which would be amazing enough, but I get to buy books about plants. So it's pretty easy because I'm a plant person and I'm basically just buying books that I'd want to buy for myself, but I get to share them with the world. And that's one of the best parts. I love providing information for people. So I'm always looking at book reviews. I read a ton of book reviews. I look at publishers' catalogs and I follow on social media the writers, gardeners and garden designers that I like and who are often the ones producing these books. So I'm usually on top of the new books that are coming out. Ultimately, the books that I select are decisions that are driven by the work that NYBG scientists and horticulturists and other staff do. The library exists to support this work, whether it's describing new species or conserving endangered ones or teaching the next generation of botanists, gardeners, botanical illustrators, floral designers, or perhaps planning the next big exhibition. And then once I select the books, I purchase them, and then I see that our catalogers describe them in our database, which makes them searchable for our researchers.
Could you just give a very, very short history of the rose?
Roses have a long and colorful history, but fossils discovered in Colorado show that they existed at least 35 million years ago. And the cultivation of them began around 5,000 years ago, most likely in China, through the crossbreeding of wild rose varieties. During the Roman period, roses were grown extensively in the Middle East and used for all sorts of things. Roman nobility established public rose gardens. And then after the Roman Empire fell, the popularity of roses ebbed and flowed depending on gardening trends of the time. They featured heavily in Greek and Roman mythology. 19th century roses increased in popularity thanks to Napoleon's wife, Josephine, who established a rose garden at Chateau de Malmaison. And this became the setting for Pierre-Joseph Redeté's 1824 watercolor collection, Les Roses, which is still considered one of the finest records of botanical illustration.
What do you think makes roses more popular than any other flower?
For one, it's their pleasing fragrance. Many roses tend to smell really good to us. They evoke strong emotions and memories, and they could be a real mood changer. Many of us enjoy using fragrances in our homes and in our bodies, and we like to stop to smell the flowers. It's a really important part of human culture. We know that Coco Chanel's famous perfume, Chanel No. 5, which was first released in 1921, uses roses. The Rose Book includes a wonderful 2018 photograph by Turkish photographer Pari Dukovic, might be mispronouncing his name, taken for New Yorker, which ran a great article about pickers harvesting centifolia roses for this purpose. They're so beautiful that we forgive them for their thorns. Amy Delahaye's essay, Roses in Fashion, describes their wonderful wearable history, and there are lots of beautiful examples in the Rose Book. We also like the way they taste. They're used in cuisine. I recently had a rose-flavored Turkish delight that one of my coworkers brought in, and it was absolutely delicious. So we really do eat, drink, and breathe them. and also wear them.
You wrote in the foreword, "Roses are so adored that they represent love itself." Is it any coincidence that the word rose is an anagram of Eros? So talk a little bit about the connection between roses and love.
Yeah, roses have long been a symbol of love and affection, passion and romance. Largely thanks to Greek mythology, Aphrodite, the goddess of beauty, gave the rose its name in honor of her son Eros. She simply rearranged the word by one letter. Again, in Roman mythology, the rose represented Venus, the goddess of love. And they were perpetuated in the popular Victorian art of floriography, aka the language of flowers, where meanings are ascribed to different flowers. Roses of different colors have different meanings, but in general, the rose tends to symbolize love. Shane Connolly's essay in the book, The Language of the Rose, goes into this a lot further.
You also wrote, "With incredible diversity of form and color, there is a rose for every person and every purpose." I love that so much. So what are a couple of your favorite unique rose varieties?
I tend to really like purple roses because I like roses and I like purple. And you don't see purple roses as often. In the Peggy Rockefeller Rose Garden at NYBG, there's a cultivar called Poseidon, which has really beautiful cupped blossoms and lavender petals. I fall in love with it every time I see it. I also tend to like roses that have two-tone petals. There's a cultivar called Garden Delight that is sort of an ombre of colors. And then we have this really cool striped rose called Camille Pissarro. It's very, very striking. I also really like green flowers, and I don't think they get enough attention. There's a rose called Rosa odorata viridiflora, and it can easily go unnoticed in a garden because it's camouflaged by its small green flowers. But I think it's so pretty. In my own garden at home, I just like ones that are easy to grow.
With the purple rose, is the scent different than, let's say, a red rose?
There are many different scents in roses, and I can't actually recall what Poseidon smells like. And there are a lot of roses who, especially cultivated roses, the ones that we tend to see in our gardens today, aren't always as fragrant because they're bred for disease resistance or long blooming periods, so they may not be as fragrant. But there are lots of different fragrances, but I couldn't tell you about Poseidon.
Perhaps one of the most evocative uses of the rose in music is as the symbol for the ultimate jam band, the Grateful Dead, you wrote in the book. What is your favorite way roses have been used as symbols in modern pop culture?
I am a big Alfred Hitchcock fan, so I love his use of roses as a recurring motif in his 1958 film Vertigo, which is a masterpiece of 20th century cinema. The movie stars Kim Novak and Jimmy Stewart. And flowers appear frequently throughout the film, and the rose is especially symbolic and enigmatic. Early in the movie, there's a scene that shows Madeline, the character played by Kim Novak. She's buying a bouquet of roses in a flower shop. She takes the bouquet with her to an art museum, where she sits looking at a painting of a woman holding the same bouquet. That bouquet reappears throughout the film. Later, she's seen plucking petals and tossing them off the Golden Gate Bridge into the bay before she leaps off the bridge. But she's rescued by the character portrayed by Jimmy Stewart. The roses represent idealized beauty and her fragile perfection. And I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler if you haven't seen it, but bouquet later is shattered, mirroring her tragic fate. It's a fantastic film, and there's a film still that's included in the book.
Today, almost infinite new varieties are being developed by hybridizers, hard word to say, in the constant quest for the perfect rose. So are you involved in the quest for the perfect rose? And what would that perfect rose look like to you?
Fortunately, I'm not involved in that quest, and I might have different ideas about what's considered perfect. But I think today, most people's idea of a perfect rose would have to be a variety that is disease resistant. Roses tend to attract a lot of pests and diseases. I don't want to sound like an advertisement for David Austin roses or anything, but one of the many wonderful attributes of his roses is that they are exceptionally disease resistant. And I know I love to garden, but I don't have as much time as I would like. So I'd rather not spend it battling diseases and pests, of which there are many. My garden faces a busy New York City sidewalk. Therefore, it's a bit of a what gardeners call hell strip, dealing with ice melts and dogs and kids playing ball. So the roses that are there were all planted before my time. And I don't know what they are. They're a classic red rose. And they bloom all summer long and into the fall. I don't have to water them or prune them. I don't have to stake them. They just live and they're just absolutely perfect.
My favorite section of the book is called Rose, the Works, where it's different examples of the rose in art. I love the Irving Penn Rose Blue Moon from 1970 of just an individual bloom. Could you chat a little bit about this?
It shows a single stem and it shows the flower from behind rather than its face. So it's an unusual perspective. And it's not a representation of ideal beauty, which roses are often used for. The petals are starting to fade. They're changing from pink to brown, and they're slightly shriveled. But there's beauty in that too. So I really like that it's saying that there's beauty in the natural process of decay. Penn was known for his fashion photography, and in particular, his work for Vogue magazine. And this portrait of the rose, it really is a portrait. It also feels like it's a portrait of a person. Maybe it's a portrait of one of his fashion models. It has a very figurative feel. And then further seems to be saying that something doesn't have to be new or young or fresh to still be beautiful. I like to think that it says getting older is beautiful, but perhaps I'm reading a little too much into this for personal reasons.
Same, 50 plus is gorgeous, if you ask
me. Right? It's the new 25.
It is. Just getting better and better. I love that so much. And I love that it's not, as you said, it's not perfection.
Right. There's no such thing as perfection.
Where can we find you on the web and social media?
I am on Instagram as Flower Scribbler. And I recently joined Blue Sky, but I haven't posted much yet. But my handle is Christine-Hollis. The New York Botanical Garden is located in the Bronx, conveniently next to the Metro North station of the same name. It's located by the Bronx Zoo, our neighbor. Fordham University is right across the street. NYBG's Instagram account is simply NYBG.
If you love roses and you want to know everything about the rose, this book is for you. Thanks so much, Christine, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. This has been a pleasure.
Okay, so where can you listen to the new Dinner Party podcast series? Well, it's on Substack, susiechase.substack.com. You can also subscribe to Dinner Party for free on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Additionally, the episodes will be available on both Decorating by the Book and Cookery by the Book. Long story short, you'll be able to listen to it virtually everywhere. Thanks for listening. Bye.